Hello and welcome to the On Call Room,
the Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree.
And it's a beautiful day to podcast. This is your first time listening. Welcome. We are currently in season 14, episode 15, 16, 17.
That's correct.
We are deep diving all the episodes. We're currently there, but we've done all the others. So if this is your first time listening, highly recommend starting at the beginning. And make sure that you watch all of the episodes of Grey's first, because we are a spoilers podcast.
Yes, we are. And there is a lot of great ways to support us. We talk about this every week. One of the ways you can support us is by visiting Patreon, www.patreon.com/theoncallroom, also in the show notes. And there you can become an intern, a resident, or an attending, and by donating to our podcast to keep this running and going, you get bonus content.
Yeah, which I'm going to announce this. We'll have to record it this month, but I'm declaring that our bonus episode this month is going to be us discussing our thoughts on Ellen Pompeo only being in 8 episodes this season.
Yes.
So if you want to know what we think about that, we're going to talk about it in the bonus episode for August.
That is correct.
So
you also get, if you are a $10 patron, you get to hang out with us on Zoom once a month. You also get five to 10 minutes extra after we call time of death. We call it post-op. This week, we're going to do a bunch of random small stories. We're going to talk about the astronaut named Marjorie, which is my cat, and then Noah Brozniak, who is having the seizures. We're also going to bring Sophia into this because she's kind of She's jumped back into the show.
Yeah.
Giving us performances left and right. So if you're interested in that, make sure you are a $10 patron.
Yes. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. 5 scalpels. And if you want to email us, please do so at theoncallroompod.com. Or no, theoncallroompod@gmail.com.
Is that right?
Theoncallroom@gmail.com. You can email both of them.
theoncallroom@gmail.com, and then it's theoncallroompod.com. It's our website.
I have a funny fact. So today, I'm a patron of MuggleCast, this like long-standing Harry Potter
podcast.
I thought
you weren't anymore.
I became one again.
Okay, great.
I wanted to hear their thoughts when Fantastic Beasts came out, like right away. So anyway, so
what did they think? Spoil it for us.
They thought it was terrible, just like the rest of us.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
It's chaotic.
Okay, I can't wait.
So the thing about them is they do live recordings. When they record, you can like watch them live stream. And it's really interesting. I realize they are leveled up than us, because if he messes up saying something, he'll just say it again because he edits his own podcast. So like he'll go back and take that out. So if he would have been like flubbering, he'd been like, and just say it over. And I was like, oh, wow, we don't do that.
No, but you have to then listen through to each.
Can you imagine?
No, I mean, we would have to be editing it because we would be paying a lot of money for.
So much.
I feel like, right?
I think so.
We would need more patrons is the point. So if you want us to stop messing up our fucking words, donate to the podcast.
Yeah. So also, I have to say,
what?
We are going to have some sick content next week because we are going to an amusement theme park this weekend.
We are. Yes.
As long as the weather is good.
Yes. I feel like there are a few things that I think we want to say. Since the episode came out.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. I got too excited.
Yeah.
I am overjoyed. I am just completely blown away by the response that you guys had from my brother's GoFundMe. It means the world. Just a little update. We are at $109,000,
which incredible.
Is truly in 2 weeks, which is really, really, really crazy. It's over a third of our goal. If I didn't make this clear last week, we are going to move forward no matter what. So,
yay!
Yeah. So even though if we don't reach the 300,000, that's obviously like shooting for the moon. Whatever we have will be put towards a down payment and makes this completely more feasible.
Yeah.
So we even like, I might be looking at a house with my mom tomorrow night. So it's very necessary. Things have been really bad lately. And it's also just really incredible. So thank you so much. I saw all of your messages. If some of you wrote notes, I read them. If it said from the pod, it just like warmed my heart. So thank you so, so, so much.
Yeah. And Abby was sharing those with me as well. And it was like, holy shit, our crew
stepped up.
And then we knew that you guys would. So thank you very much.
I also was laughing thinking about, so the video that many of you have seen, like for the GoFundMe, starts with me saying like, this is Trevor or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
this is Trevor.
Yes. Okay. I have heard that so many times because, like, whenever someone shares it on Instagram, like, it starts playing.
Mm-hmm. And it's like click, click, click.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder if this is how all of you feel about the opening of this podcast. Like, welcome to the on-call room, because that's me every time. I want to switch it up. I think you should start it sometime.
Okay. I will.
Will you do the Dax Shepherd?
Welcome. Yeah, I could.
To armchair expert.
Experts on experts.
So thank you. Times a million. I love you all so, so much.
Yes.
And it's still there. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you didn't listen to last week, there's a really special GoFundMe near and dear to my heart. You can find it in the show notes of last week's episode. It's also all over my Instagram,
It's also on our Instagram.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we have a post about it. And then in our bio is the link to the GoFundMe.
Perfect. So on our Instagram, which is at the On Call Room Pod, you can check that out there. Thank you.
In other news, today was my last class. Mm. Not last class ever, but...
This is a big week for you.
Yeah, but my last class of the summer, too. And I had a presentation today, so it always feels like, you know, a relief to have that done. And it was interesting because this is the first class I've had in person. And so he just, like, filled out a rubric while we were presenting and afterwards just handed it to us. Like, so we got our grade immediately. 100%. What's up?
Hell yeah.
Got another 4 point in this class.
You are so smart.
Thank you so much. It's funny though, because I don't feel that much of a relief because I'm like, in a week, I will be starting 4 classes. And I don't think...
How many have you ever taken at a time?
3.
Okay.
But and I was working. So 4 should be...
I think it will be. Think about how many hours, 30 plus hours a week you were in an office not doing schoolwork.
Yes. So I will definitely have plenty of more time.
Oh my God. You could have like coffee in the morning in your pajamas.
I know.
Her last day of work is Friday.
My last day of work is Friday. And then I have a week off and then we're going to Traverse City. Well, this coming weekend, we're going to Michigan's Adventure.
Kicking it off.
We're having like a ladies pool party on Sunday.
Oh yeah, that's right.
If the weather permitting.
Yeah.
And then we're having John's grandparents over for dinner on Tuesday. And then we're going to Traverse City.
Oh, fun.
And then I start school again. So I have a lot of like fun things planned. I really wanted to clean the basement, but I don't think we're going to get to that. That's okay. But anyway, yeah, so good day today.
You've been working so hard and now you still get to work hard, but like you get to focus on one thing.
Just on one thing. And
you don't have to put on work pants.
Oh my God.
You don't have to do your hair every morning.
I know. Except the one thing that's a little frustrating, but fine, is I have class every day. I tried to line up my classes, didn't work. So now I have to go 4 times a week. It's fine. It's only a semester, but...
I'm excited to see your B-reels while you're, like, at home comfy.
Yeah. Hopefully. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not going to take up our time on the podcast, but I'm going to have to talk to you about, like, how do you work from home?
Ooh, I have lots of good advice.
You know, or, like, do you go on certain days, do you go do something?
Are any
like,
of your classes in person?
Yeah, all 3 of them. Well, 3 of them. One of them isn't.
We'll talk about this after recording. It's the post-op that none of you get access to.
Yeah, sorry. It's going to be over wine.
Yeah. So anyways, do we have anything else we need to say? John would like to shout out to our listener, Chris. Yeah. He's coming down the stairs and he'd be mad at me if I didn't say it. That's our only, it's a Patreon benefit that you only get if you're married to one of us, which is where you can shout out to listeners.
Yes, that is correct. So if you want my husband to shout out to you, but not actually say anything, and I will tell you that he shouted out to you, become a $10 patron. That's a new bonus.
And then marry Bree. He's laughing.
Yeah.
So anyways, I feel like there's a lot to talk about. In this episode.
Let's get into it.
We have flashbacks. We have Nick Marsh. We have Owen and Teddy in the snow.
We have Tom Krasick and April Kepner.
Tom Krasick and April Kepner.
And we have Eli.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dude, that skin, I can't. Okay.
Okay. We're going to get there.
Okay. So our episodes today are season 14, episode 15 and 16 and 17. Old Scars, Future Hearts, Caught Somewhere in Time, and One Day Like This.
All right, monologues. On average, a healthy heart beats 115,000 times per day. Was that right? Yeah. When excited, the heart rate can double. The heart pumps 2,000 gallons of blood through your entire body 24 hours a day. It never rests. The heart is the hardest working muscle in your body. But when it's damaged, it's just like skin. It scars, and scar tissue can be very dangerous in a heart. It weakens it, and eventually a heart full of scars stops working. Scarred hearts don't heal, but over time, the scars can change. They can become smoother and softer, and some scars even fade away. Meredith Grey.
The first surgeons were vivisectionists. When they opened a body, they had no intention of closing it. They just wanted to see what was inside. And what they found was a world of possibility. The possibility to heal, to reverse the damage, to turn back time. When the worst of our fears are realized, when everything we've counted on has disappeared, something still drives us to try to fix the past or to find our future. When the only thing that needs our attention is the present and its infinite possibilities. Meredith Grey.
God, I got a lot of numbers this time. 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, 86,400 seconds. That's all it takes for a patient to go from sick to healthy, from hopeful to dire. One day we can bring you back from the brink, change your entire life in one heartbeat, one single breath. It's why doctors watch you like a hawk, hold you for observation. It's why we behave as if your every move, every sound, every input and output is life or death. Because it is. 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, 86,400 seconds.
525,600 minutes.
That's all it takes to save your life. To change your life. One single day can pull us from the depths of despair, and one single day can fill us with more possibilities than we could imagine. And that was April Kepner, Owen Hunt, and Meredith Grey.
Shotgun work up. We have Charlie Peterson, heart failure.
Marjorie Kersey, rhabdomyolysis.
Perfect.
Acute kidney injury, fistula, and chest abscess.
Liz Brosniak, pregnancy, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Noah Brosniak, brain tumor.
Michelle Velez, gender dysphoria.
Nick Marsh, renal vein thrombosis.
Thrombosis sounds like an instrument.
It does. I'm playing the thrombosis tonight at the local bar. Come on down.
Eli Rigler, diverticulitis, toxic epidermal necrolysis.
And Vicky Greenberg, liver failure.
All right, buckle up, everyone. Get your clipboards. We're going to start for rounds, which I believe clipboards was once a thought about term for this section. Joe is applying to residencies far away from Seattle. It's clear that Alex is upset about it, and when they finally talk about it, they argue. Joe finally feels free because Paul is dead, and she now has a ton of career opportunities. Alex is sad that Joe doesn't want to stay because of him, and Meredith tells Alex that Joe isn't abandoning Alex, that she's not Izzy. He ends up spending the night at Mare's house. Joe lights a bunch of candles around the apartment, and when Alex gets back, she starts giving him a speech about how she used to run away from the people who dared to love her. He tells her to pause, and he starts looking for his engagement ring for Joe, and she finally yells at him and says that she is wearing it. She gets down on her knees and says that she always wanted to run until she met him. She doesn't want to leave him. She says, "You are my home, and you are my heart," and then she proposes.
April sleeps with Tom, and he stays in her house all day while April starts to drink again. Tom references that when he first met her, Amelia Shepherd was giving her power of attorney. He asks how that woman becomes this woman. He guesses a bunch of things and then guesses a crisis of faith. April says that God isn't dead. She just hates him so much that she wishes he was dead. Tom and April stay together all day and are talking about religion and all the parts of it that don't make sense. Tom tells April that he walked away from the church as well after his kid died from a freak accident at school. He took a baseball bat to the head at school and died instantly. He was so mad at God. His marriage fell apart and he ended up going back to church because you can talk out loud and not look crazy. He said he would go to mass and he would talk to his son and that he still does. I don't think God left me or I left God. I simply got in a fight. That's all. He asks April for her story, and she starts to have sex with him.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true. After a horrible day working on the interns on their trauma assessment, Jackson pulls April into another room and asks how he can help her. She tries making out with him, and after he turns her down, she says that it would help her if he could take Harriet for the night. Whoa, sorry.
Popcorn.
April starts working on a patient who is a rabbi who has a rash due to antibiotics, and it is slowly killing him. He refuses drugs to help his pain and begins to talk to April about her relationship to God. We will talk more about that later in the episode, but in the end, he begins to lose consciousness and April holds his hand and pretends to be his wife as he passes away. In the end, he taught her that some things just happen and we don't get to know why. April finds Bailey in the chapel and tells her this and helps her light a candle for Eli.
Maggie and Jackson go to the bar and talk about how they were both quirky and weird growing up. They declare that they are both undone by each other. And when they're making out in a supply closet and decide to cancel their dinner reservation, they walk out and see Catherine and Richard. Before Catherine and Jackson are going to operate on Michelle, they begin arguing about Jackson dating Maggie. Michelle, the patient, walks out of the surgery. Richard is upset at Catherine because he says that no one is ever going to be good enough for her son, and Richard makes the argument that Maggie is the best there is. He gives Jackson his blessing, but says that if he ever hurts her, he will come after him. Catherine's biggest concern is that if something happens between Maggie and Jackson, her and Richard will be in trouble. Jackson tells his mom that if she is so worried about that, she can take Maggie's side if and when it happens. Jackson and Maggie don't end up going on their dinner date because Jackson has to watch Harriet, but they allude to their sexual tension.
Meredith approaches Marie Cerrone about her falling out with Ellis. Marie tells Meredith that she and Ellis created the laparoscopic biliary reconstruction together, but Ellis won her second Harper Avery for it. She claims the award was theirs. She claims that after this happened, she was broken and never returned to the United States again. Meredith says that perhaps she gave Ellis too much power. She now believes that she has the right to work with, She now believes that she has a right to the work that her mother stole from her. If Meredith wants her patent, she must make a public statement that the Ellis Gray procedure is now the Gray Cerrone procedure. Meredith thinks that Marie Cerrone was Ellis's Christina. Meredith tells Marie that she cannot give away her mother's legacy without hearing her side. Marie tells her that she has the polymer and Meredith science, and the liver project will be under her name. Joe does a bunch of research and finds several polymers that could replace the one that Marie Cerrone has, and Meredith and her get to work on it.
And lastly, there's two more. After Amelia and Owen sleep together a lot, they end up talking about their feelings, and she makes Owen think about Teddy. Owen gets in a cab and heads to an international airport. He meets Teddy at her apartment, and he tells Teddy that for the first time, there's nothing standing in their way. They make out and sleep together. And whenever they are together, talking about their past and how they loved each other, it's snowing outside. She asks what he is doing there in Germany and if this is it for him. He says that he's willing to move to Germany and then suggests that maybe she will come back to Seattle. Owen says that the marriage with Amelia led him to her, and she starts to question about what that means. He admits that it was Amelia's idea for him to come to Germany and that he was sleeping with her only a night before. Teddy tells Owen that he is afraid of being alone, that it's never been about her, and she kicks him out of her house and says they are done.
Then Nick Marsh is here. Meredith first sees Dr. Marsh in the hospital after a kidney transplant, his own. He is only 5 weeks post-op and he collapses. He doesn't want to call any family, but he convinces Meredith to stay and hang out with him. We learn that he lives with his niece, Charlotte, because his sister is irresponsible. We also learn that his mom passed away when he was 15 years old. He becomes a transplant surgeon because he couldn't sit still, and he was inspired by how his mom needed a heart. He and Meredith talk about how they would do if they
were... What they would do.
Or how they would do what they would do, how they would do if they weren't doctors, among other conversation topics. His lab results come back and she finds out that he has a clot in his renal vein. They rush him up to surgery. On the way to surgery, he is telling her where the deed to the house is and the money for his niece's college. Meredith sees him when he wakes up from surgery and lets him know that she saved the kidney. Later that night at the bar, she tells Alex that she hasn't felt this way about anyone since Derek, but since he was her patient, there's nothing she can do about it.
Ooh, okay, sounds a lot. Right. Sorry, everyone. What's your first note?
Mare has been up all night trying to figure out why Cerrone hated Ellis.
Mine is Tom wears a silk robe and makes frittatas.
That's a better first note.
Tom is becoming more and more appealing to me.
I really like the silk robe on him.
Like, I think if Tom, he's not quite, like, looks-wise the type I tend to go for.
Sure.
So if he looked the type I tend to go for, I feel like the frittatas, the silk robe, the deep talks in bed, yeah. the sarcasm, like I'd be down
Sounds
for
like
it.
He's pretty good in bed too, so.
I feel like he must be well-versed.
Yeah, because Teddy was really into him. And
right, I know.
April.
At first I thought that was his robe, but then we realized he's wearing April's
Yeah, robe. He's wearing it. Oh, you thought that was, that no, he brought a robe
before I wrote that note before she says, take my robe off.
Oh, but wouldn't that also be funny that would mean he had a silk robe in his car from that board game night.
You know Richard brings his silk robe wherever he goes.
You're absolutely right.
Okay. What topic in that first few episodes
I just want to say my next note, which I think is so funny, is Maggie buttering the kitchen towel.
Oh, you're buttering the towel. Yeah.
She's thinking about Jackson. I thought that was very funny.
Do you butter towels when you think about Jackson?
I butter something else.
Wow. Inappropriate, but I like it. Okay. Of these beginning topics, which, like, what of this these episodes hit you the most? Like, let's just go all over the place. Okay, yeah, the April.
April
stress.
Hit me really hard. Teddy's reaction to Owen, so good. Those were, like, my two top big ones. So weirdly, the Joe thing didn't get me. I was
kind of... The proposal?
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing this is... I'm not an actress. No one come at me for this. Sometimes, like, Joe... Like her, that person's like acting doesn't quite get there for me. And like in the proposal, like I think about like the times when like Meredith, Bailey, Christina have like shined acting wise. And I just feel like Joe has never
met that.
No, it always feels like someone is acting that part. Like it just
doesn't feel like she's Joe.
Yes. That's how I feel. And so
it's kind of like Ellen Pompeo now.
Yes, it's Ellen. Yes, exactly. Versus like, I am convinced that like Alex Karev is Alex Karev.
Yeah.
Like he's not an actor playing Alex Karev. They just feel like the same thing.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I cannot get there with her. And so while the one part that did get me is when she yells at him, she's like, I am wearing it. Like,
That part didn't get me.
Yeah.
But that's good. I'm glad it did for you.
Just for that second. But then as soon as she started monologuing, I lost it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it was like, the writing was really good. Like, you are my home. Like that phrase should be, it's like we saw flashbacks of her not having a home.
Yeah.
Like, and literally like that was her trauma. And now she's saying that like, it doesn't matter. He is her home. I should have GGBs and I don't.
And we don't.
I am happy for them though.
Yeah. The other thing that I loved that I thought was really funny in these episodes is when Richard and Catherine see Maggie and Jackson.
Oh,
the look on their faces and the look on Maggie and Jack, like brilliant, comedic, great. But maybe let's just keep going with the Joe thing and maybe talk about those flashbacks.
Yeah, I thought those were interesting. I thought the actress they chose to play Joe looked like, I thought that was a great in between. The Alex one, he looked too preppy.
Yeah.
But he sounded like him.
Yes. And then it was Maggie.
Yes, which I felt like the Maggie one wasn't necessary.
I thought the Maggie one was cute when Jackson was in the OR.
When she's talking about it, doesn't know he's there.
Yeah. Maggie is one of my all-time favorite characters. I think she is so funny. I think she's so smart. And when she says that poem was ahead of its time, it's like, I audibly laughed. I was like, that's hilarious. She's writing about this corpse.
Yes.
And as like a love poem, it's like, I'm going to hold this up. This was really good. And then the guy that makes her butter towels is in the OR listening to her talk about something super embarrassing.
His response to it too was so great. Like, I feel like he just jumped right in and started talking about it. Like he didn't, I don't know. I just thought it was like a great transition where I actually think he probably thought it was very charming.
Oh,
you know, like
totally.
He wasn't turned off by it, which I think she initially thinks that like he might be. I just wish then we would have seen Jackson a flashback because it was like the Alex and Joe. And then she's talking about how she's quirky and weird. And Jackson says he was too. And I wish we would have seen that.
Yeah. We never really get any flashbacks with Jackson.
No. I also felt really sad for Alex when like the girlfriend he was with like, was making fun of his mom and how that like, I feel like that was probably really like cemented for him and like changed who he was fundamentally. Because after that he goes to his mom and he's like, no, I'm going to stay here with you. And like, as we know, becoming caring for someone, even if it's unhealthy, is like his go-to.
Izzy.
Smush face.
Oh, Ava. Yeah.
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 So I just feel like that was good to see. The Joe one like didn't, I mean, I guess it was showing she runs from those who care for her.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I could have done without all of the flashbacks.
Same. They did not need to happen.
I didn't think it was necessary. I think we definitely could have gotten the same idea of you being my home. We know Joe lived in her car.
Right.
We didn't need to see that. To make it...
I feel like... I guess it was supposed to be like a very Alex Joe-centric episode and I didn't even realize the proposal was going to happen until it was happening.
Yeah.
Like, okay, candle proposal. I think about the Michael and from The Office. Oh my God, what is her name?
Oh, Holly.
The, like that proposal with candles.
I cry so hard in that episode.
The feelings I feel there, I had none of that for this.
No. And that was a sitcom. Like,
and the sprinklers.
The sprinklers. And the
everyone's looking
me?
In the yeah. window.
Oh, it's so perfect. And then they're like, we're moving. And you're like, no.
No. Yeah. Oh, God. That's a lot.
The Office. Okay. So, Alex and Joe. There was one other. Oh, I guess just the whole storyline about like her wanting to apply to different places.
I remember this happening. Meredith ends up offering her.
Yeah, and I was fellowship. Happy that Meredith like kind of talked
yes.
Alex down because he was a grump all day.
Yes.
And I get it, but like also Alex, like communicate, like don't just be a grump all day.
I felt like Meredith is such a good friend because she immediately was like, oh, you're remembering that Izzy left you. Like that's not going to happen. Like mm-hmm. this is different. However, you will leave Joe.
Yeah. Also, I thought it was sweet too when they don't see each other the night before and she's like, I missed you. And he's like, I missed you too.
I love when he's at Mare's drinking with her though.
Yeah.
I need more of that. I think why I might be jaded by the Joe and Alex stuff too, and I don't want to harp on it. We've talked about it so much. It's just that we know they aren't together.
I think that is honestly a big part of it because I have a note like, oh, God damn it. You know, like.
Right. I can't even appreciate this.
Yeah. Because we know it ends. And it's almost like I never felt that way, like watching like Burke and Christina or watching like Callie and Arizona. I think it's because it was such a weird.
It didn't make sense.
It didn't make sense. And it was a way to get him off of the show.
It was quick. Unlike even the Callie Arizona was long.
Yeah.
I guess the Burke one wasn't really.
No, but like those just like felt right. This felt like, what the fuck?
His saxophone. His books.
Like, you're gonna go.
Yeah, no.
But I don't know. Maybe we'll feel, again, we haven't rewatched that one. So we might feel differently about it.
I'm nervous to rewatch it.
Well, I am too.
It felt like a painful experience. Like, it felt like you had to get through it.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think that's why I feel a little not connected to their storyline. Because it feels like it's all for naught.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know much more about Joe and Alex.
Mm-mm.
It's that thing too, I think, where they're trying to get us as viewers to be afraid that she's going to leave, but really Meredith offers her that position. So can we talk about Maggie and Jackson before we talk about April?
Absolutely.
Okay. So out of the whole Maggie Jackson, they're clearly like, they are just building this sexual tension, like, which is great. That's such a Grey's thing. I feel like that was all of Meredith and Derek in the first few seasons.
Just like smelling each other's hair.
Yes. I did love that the reason Catherine was upset, I thought her reason was incredibly sweet. Like
when she finally got to it.
Yes. Her reason is that like she loves Richard so much that she doesn't want something to get between them because they're finally good. Although like they're always off and on.
Yes.
But I thought that was really like eye-opening. And I loved even that Jackson's like, okay, mom, then you can take Maggie's side. Like if something happens, it's okay.
I thought that was really sweet too. I also love that the patient that she made them like.
She's like, figure this shit out.
And then did it in front of them. It was like, okay, now hug it out.
Yeah.
Like, good. Yeah. Now we can do my surgery. Her surgery ended up really great, which is, I think they didn't even say anything. Yeah, but they didn't even say anything. I think she smiled or whatever. So we knew it went well.
Yeah.
But I loved the look on their faces when they opened the door because it would be so embarrassing.
Oh.
And then I love how Maggie says, like, I don't really feel like Richard is my dad until like moments like this. Like when sex gets brought into it, it's like, oh.
Then he feels like my dad.
Yeah, you're my dad.
Well, because I think she's like she's talking to Meredith about that, right? Because I think like Meredith has similar-ish vibes. Like he's not her dad, but she sometimes feels that way. So their date is postponed, but we will get it eventually.
Yeah.
I'm glad they're dragging this out.
And Richard has, or Jackson has Richard's blessing about it.
I know. I thought that, but he was like, but don't fuck it up.
Yeah. Because he was like, Maggie is incredibly
wonderful. Which I thought
that
familial part went on for longer, but I guess it was just like the one episode.
No. And it does make sense. I mean,
they're not related.
They're not related and they didn't know each other growing up at all.
Exactly.
So it doesn't matter.
Okay. I feel like I want to get the Meredith Marie Cerrone out of the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Because then I feel like Owen, Nick Marsh, and April are like the big three. So I think the only thing to me that like stood out about this, like I feel like as a viewer, we know they're going to find another polymer. She's going to be able to do it. Or Marie's going to come to her senses or something. Mm-hmm. But what I did like was that like that question where Meredith was like, I think that Marie was my mom's Christina. And then someone asked her like, would you have been upset? Or like, would you have done, you know? And she's like, yeah, I wouldn't have talked to her again. Like mm-hmm. there are some things in their careers that like outweigh friendship almost.
Yeah. She said something about her, like she sharked her or whatever, which we,
the phrase Christina yeah, uses.
Exactly. Like if you want to be a shark, then be a shark. And yeah. And I think it would be really, complicated ask to change your mother's legacy after she's passed. And
I love that she said like, I need her side and I'm not going to be able to get that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think you're right. I mean, we know something's going to work. I'm happy that Joe did all that research.
Yeah. It's very villain origin story though, that like Marie Serrano is like, I have the science. I have the polymer. I will make this my project.
Yeah.
Pull the lava crunk.
Yeah. Very much Yzma. Yeah.
Which is Debbie Allen, the voice of Yzma? Someone on that TikTok I sent you, are you searching it? Yzma. I think that one I sent you where
No, Eartha Kitt.
Oh, okay. I thought it, never mind. Anyways.
Oh, was there a comment about that or something?
That TikTok I sent you, I don't know if you watched it, where the girl was saying which Grey's Anatomy characters would fat shame her. She went through like the funny, did you not watch it?
I don't think I remember this
I just
one.
Sent it today.
Oh, I didn't see it. I must have been, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's this funny TikToker where like all the characters are going over her head and she's like, which Grey's characters would fat shame me?
Yeah.
And anyway, she gets to Catherine and she references Yzma. So I was like, oh, is she the voice? But she's not.
Gotcha. Okay.
She says Derek Shepherd wouldn't. Mm. Do you think he would? The comment section was thinking he would. She says he wouldn't because she's like, you see how he flirts with Bailey? Like, you know, but.
That's a tough call. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if he would.
She says Arizona wouldn't. She's Rainbow and Sunshine. And like someone in the comments said, post leg removal, Arizona totally would. like angry, upset.
Callie
Arizona.
Wouldn't.
No. Who else did she have on it? She had Teddy, who she said Teddy wouldn't. It was very funny. You should watch it.
Do you think Meredith would?
Meredith didn't show up. I don't know. She said Maggie wouldn't. And then everyone in the comments was like, Maggie would bring it about in like a heart surgeon way. Like, yeah. I just care about you.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll watch it when we post up.
Post up.
Okay. Can we talk about April?
Is that what we want to do next?
Yeah, April and then Amelia Owen and then Nick Marsh.
Okay,
we should end with the future.
Okay. April.
Ooh.
Okay. Great acting throughout all
these
episodes.
She's a fucking star.
Yeah. I mean, we start with April pouring a Bloody Mary. Early in the morning. So clearly she doesn't have to work that day.
Yes.
And she is very hungover. She wants Tom to leave so she can puke in private.
Yes.
And she is having hair of the dog because she is super hungover. Because this is right after game board night. And she was fucked up. We get into like Tom being like, yo, we said it in the rounds, but like something's clearly going on here. And when he throws out crisis of faith, it's almost like
it was too easy.
Yeah. And then she looks away. God is dead.
I think he's the perfect person. We don't know that much about him, so they can make his background whatever they need in this mm-hmm. moment to fit. But the fact that like he too was Catholic or is Catholic and like, I feel like he's the perfect perspective for her to hear.
Yes.
Because like Jackson can't relate to her. Like there's nothing Jackson can say that's going to help her because initially from the jump, Jackson doesn't believe what she believes.
Absolutely. I think I got really, really teary eyed when he said, oh, God is dead. And she said, mm-hmm. no, God's not dead. I just hate him so much. I wish he was. Because almost sometimes it's like, it's almost easier. I don't know. But like, you know, when you have a crisis of faith to be like, I don't believe in anything.
Right.
Like, that no longer exists to me. It's a different type of grief or loss. And I'm not saying one's easier than the other, but to be so fucking mad, still to have belief in something, but be so mad, I don't know, is a different type of pain.
Yeah. And it's also so interesting because you know, when Tom talks about his kid, like, you know, April's thinking about her son, mm-hmm. which I kind of was thinking back, like, remember, she did not ever grieve that.
No, she went across the seas.
Right. And then she like went back to work and like wouldn't talk up because Jackson talks about how like I was here and I grieved alone.
Yeah.
Like she, what's that, the stress cycle? Like she never made it through the stress cycle.
Yes.
And I feel like she's in it right now where like, I think she's finally realizing, yeah, obviously the Matthew thing and his wife and all of that adds up as well. But I think she's also still mad about her first loss of her son, you know? Like, I think it's like finally come to a head.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she was like, I didn't think at first, like when Tom shares about his kid, I thought that would like do something in her. I think it did internally, but I like that they made us wait and like she didn't, it didn't change her mind.
Yeah. Cause I remember this differently and I remembered her sharing with Tom and maybe that comes later. Maybe it doesn't. But, it was interesting. Like I thought, oh, now she's going to reciprocate. Like he said, he's like, now your turn. And she, you know, initiate sex with him again. I was like, oh, I didn't remember it, that at all. I want to just say a couple things about Tom. I love that, like, April's kind of like, you wouldn't fucking get it. Like, you're not religious. And he's like, slaps right back. Like, no, I know the Sermon on the Mount. Like, I know the New Testament.
Yes.
Like, I was raised Catholic. When he says his son died.
And it's such a horror, like, such an unexpected.
Yeah. The line that really got me, he said, it was unfair. The priest said, talk to God. I wanted to find God and choke the life out of him.
Ugh.
I wanted to talk to my son. And then he says his marriage fell apart. And then you talk about in church, you can talk out loud and not look crazy. And you would, and that's that part. I don't think God left me or I left God. Mm-hmm. I think we just got in a fight. And that, I think, makes a lot of sense to April too. Like, to me, it's just so applicable because again, it's not Tom saying, I don't believe in God anymore. Like, but this is something super fucked up happened to me and I still deal with it and I still believe, but I'm angry. And I think you're right that like no one else has really given her that perspective.
No. And I also think too, like when we get to Eli, like Tom makes this point that like sometimes fucked up things happen and like I was mad at God. I think later Eli brings then it all together with the solution. It's just that like sometimes you don't get to know. Like,
you don't get to know why.
Right. And so I feel like, cause like she hears what Tom says, I think, and it's like, okay, this doesn't only happen to me. Like this guy had this horrible thing happen as well. And now he still goes to church and that's where he talks to his son. That's the part that really got me too, is that like, he says that he still goes because like church is the one place where you can talk to yourself out loud and it's not crazy. And that he goes there to talk to his son. Oh, it's just like, it's really, really, really heartbreaking. And I think like, I think that's one puzzle piece for her, but I don't think it fully connects it yet. Like, clearly she's not ready to go there. Also she doesn't know him that well to like, I feel like she's not ready to open up
totally
to him.
Then we have April, like, doing the trauma.
Which I was glad there was that between the Eli thing. Like, it dragged out even more.
Yes. And also, I'm glad that they pulled that back in because April was so fiery when she was doing her trauma certification.
Yes.
And so I thought it was a really good callback. Oh, the interns are going to do their trauma certification. And for her to be to Owen, like, let me in. Like, put me in, coach. And when, I want to do it.
When she was like, it rained on me when I was doing it. And it's like, that's because it was raining out. Like you're making rain. Also, knowing about DeLuca and like his journey later and like his coming to terms with mental illness, the way that he is like April, like he kind of like tries to connect with her. Like, like was really like, I don't know. It was nice to see. It didn't work, but.
Yeah. So she's just like. I think she puts DeLuca in charge or something. It's super
crying.
It's super wacky. And then Owen comes and he's like, sends her away. He bends the hose in half. But I just love that he's like, it's okay, guys. She's gone now. Everyone take a breath. And Schmidt's weeping.
And well, like, and before that, Casey, I think his name is, he was like, we removed the source of the problem. Like, cause Casey faked that call to get April to go away.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's cheating. And he's like, no, I removed, you were the source of like destruction. So that was great.
She was so scary. I thought it was really good with Owen being like, it's okay. Everyone take a deep breath.
Levi's like sobbing.
Yeah.
He's not okay.
Yeah. So then we have Eli.
This, I did not remember this until it kind of started, but even then I didn't remember the details.
The skin.
Okay, that was too much. That's probably why I blocked it out.
Yeah, that was.
When she touched it.
Yeah.
And it just fell off. Also, and wouldn't he have screamed?
Yeah. So, okay. What exactly? He took an antibiotic.
And he had this crazy. So there was something that he had wrong. He could have gone the long route and had a surgery.
Diverticulitis. Yeah.
Yes. But Bailey was like, or we can try an antibiotic that sometimes works, whatever. But because some people have bad reactions to antibiotics, it was called like, what was it? 10?
Sorry, yeah. Okay.
That was fucked up. Of course, he's so this like understanding guy.
So it like kills you.
Your skin separates from itself. Like it fights against itself.
And there's no way to.
Dude, I guess not. It happened real. I assume if it's happened to like your organ, you know what I mean? Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
This fucking wrecked me. I feel like April goes into it like, oh, a religious guy. Here we go.
Yeah.
This guy. Okay. The part. So she says something like, please let me take away your pain. Like I can take away. Did she say 60% or something like that? Talking about giving him pain meds, and he says no. And he says that, like, basically, he comes to this term that, like, let me talk to you. That will, like, that's what I do. That will make me feel purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
He's the perfect guy. I love to, like, they keep referencing because he's Jewish and, like, that he only does, like, the part one, like, doesn't have the sequel or whatever he kept calling the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I have a quote from him, but I like, might be jumping too far to the end. But he says, okay. April goes, I did every single thing God asked of me. And he says, that guarantees you of what? He says, there is no guarantee. He says, if you do this or that, then everything in your life is going to be good. Nowhere in any book is there a guarantee. Nobody in the Bible lived a life free of suffering or injustice. And if they lived lives like that, why should ours be different? Now, if people only believed in God when things were good, I guarantee you after the Holocaust, not a single Jew would be a believer. Faith wouldn't be real faith if you only believed when things were good. That was like one chunk.
Yeah. And then I love how she's like, well, that's not fair. You brought up the Holocaust. Like, I can't. But he goes on to say, I really appreciate.
You sound like a child.
Yeah. That this next part is like, you sound like a child, which I really appreciated that because he's like, I don't have much time.
Right.
Usually I would like agree with you and
try
like,
to make
say,
you figure this
yeah.
out.
Yeah. But he says, so either you can believe in God and goodness or believe it's pointless, cruel, and random. And the part that killed me, because it reminds me so much of therapy. And so often our clergy, our rabbis, our priests, our ministers, they step in as like counselors for people. And when she is weeping and he's like, it's unimaginable pain.
Yeah. She says it's not because he asks if she's happy. And then she says it's not narcissism. It's pain, unimaginable pain.
And he says, God's not indifferent to our pain, which.
That could make me religious again.
I know.
It's so beautiful. Like it's. And then he says that it's tikkun olam, and he says means that the world is full of brokenness and it's our job to put it back together again. It assumes that the world is broken and in need and in pain, and it's our job to fix it.
You know, I was listening to Glennon Doyle's podcast about polyamory recently, and one of the people on there was talking about how she had like gone out and she had like this feeling of like, she's like this thing connected with me and was like, I want pretty much to be born through you. Like I want like a child or whatever. And she was like struggling with like, do I bring this child into the world or not? Like the world is so bad. And her partner was like, well, the only problems that are going to get solved that humans have made are the right humans. So, and I think that's such a beautiful perspective because I know I have felt that very recently, like this world's so fucked.
Yeah.
Like, why would you bring anyone into it? And it goes perfectly with like, the world is full of brokenness. So it's our job to like,
fix it.
To fix it. And I don't know, it's a really lovely sentiment.
It's just incredible because like he is validating her pain. He's not telling her it's not real. He's not telling her that like she needs to shove it away and like be happy again.
He's completely empathizing with it.
Yes. Yeah. And he's saying like the world that you previously thought maybe because things were okay. Like that's not the world. Like the world is broken. Like these things do happen and God is indifferent to our pain. And so I feel like for her that touches the
he's
thing.
Not indifferent.
Sorry, not indifferent. That's right. I feel like it touches the like Tom brings up this and that, like, he got in a fight with God, but is still, like, that's okay. Like, you can get in a fight with God and that doesn't mean anything. And then he's bringing this full circle that, like, this is a part of our world. I don't know. I just think before that, her life, she thought it was, if I do everything right, everything will be okay.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it is.
And Eli's like, no, that is not
There's
life.
No guarantee. Where does it say that?
Yeah. There's no guarantee that if you keep the faith or do the things or whatever, that you're not going to be without suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the fucking human condition, man.
Yeah.
And that's what makes religion and faith and all of these things so extremely complicated, because they can bring so much goodness and mm-hmm. safety and security, and they can also make you feel so lost, alone, and when you like think, oh my God, my life is falling apart, often that's like, you know, the furthest that you feel from God, when you're like, where is God in
right,
all
in
of this.
This.
It's like that Amy Grant song.
Yeah.
Ask me if I think there's a God up in the heavens. You know that one?
I don't know.
Where did he go in the middle of her shame? It's so good.
Oh, I should listen to that.
Oh,
I'll listen to it on the way home.
You'll cry.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I think too, what I love is I feel like the talk that this guy's giving couldn't be further from organized religion. Do you mean like he's talking in this like vast spiritual way that isn't like directing towards one religion specifically or one practice. It's just like as a whole. And
yeah.
I think it's really fucking beautiful. Like, I think this like roundabout, I'm excited to see the next episode, because I feel like there's got to be some sort of conclusion to this. But I feel like April is such an incredibly well-rounded character for this whole arc.
Yeah. And I'm really proud of Grace for like going down this rabbit hole, because
without offending anyone, it doesn't feel offensive and it doesn't feel pushy.
And it feels very real.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast, who've watched this show, have their own personal experiences with questioning their faith and, and whatever like conclusion you come to at the end, is fine. But that process of being in the middle of questioning, being either angry, of losing faith or whatever, if you've been through it, it is awful. It is excruciating. And it's unimaginable pain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just the pain of all the bad things that have happened to her in her life. It's the unimaginable pain of the fact that everything that I believed, what was good and true in God, is no longer.
Right.
And that's...
it's devastating that he didn't get to see his wife.
Oh my God.
But she pretends to be her, which is beautiful. And I love how
because he says that in the beginning.
He's like, why can't you just pretend?
Yeah.
And then also that he forgives Dr. Bailey.
Yeah.
Like without, because Bailey is, I feel like it's the last thing Bailey needs is to think, you know, because it really wasn't her fault. Like Jackson is even saying like, this is like random.
Yeah.
This is, again, it is something that like is hard and broken and makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
And so when April goes, because we've seen April go into that chapel a few times lately and they've not been like for healing. And I feel like she goes there for the reconnection and she just lights that candle with Bailey. Bailey not being able to light the candle feels so relatable. Like when you're just so frustrated.
Yeah. And I think it's perfect that it's April who then lights it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And says, Eli forgave you. And then she grabs her hand, right? She said, like, sometimes we don't get to know why.
Yeah.
Some things just happen and we don't get to know why. She repeats what Eli says.
And that to me is the crux of it all. Like sometimes things happen and we don't get to know why. Like maybe, that is what she needed to hear.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe someday.
Yeah.
Maybe in the behind the bookshelf.
For sure. That's where I'm going.
Maybe we'll know then. I don't know. I feel I could talk about these episodes for like, I could start a whole podcast on these like five episodes.
These are ones I would rewatch too, like for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I forgot how good this is. And I'm just still, some things we don't get to know why. Why the fuck did they take April off the show?
Yeah. What the fuck?
She could have become the Eli. Like she could have talked to patients. You know what I mean? Like she has this wisdom that I think she's going to come out of this. Like she's so much better. And why the fuck do they remove her?
Yeah. She could have definitely been in like palliative care or hospice or something.
For all of these new interns who I don't even want.
Yeah.
I want April.
I know. I know.
Okay. Let's talk about or do you have anything else?
Well, I was just going to say the last thing is it's funny. I want April because I feel like in the beginning, we're like, God, April's annoying. And now look at how far we've come. We're like, wow, she's so...
And that
because
is,
it's because she's a real human now.
That's the sign of a good written, a well-written character.
Yeah.
Even her annoyingness was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like her little journal in the
beginning. I think she's a great actress.
She really is. She really shines.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Owen and Teddy.
Yes.
Owen is such
Owen's such an idiot. What an idiot. I forgot how this played out. And when he starts talking in the bed about Amelia, I was like, oh, and you doofus. You fucking doofus.
And just also, it makes me love Teddy more, which I feel like current Teddy, I sometimes have problems with because I feel like what happened to this Teddy that like stood up for herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what it is her and Owen have a child and that changes things. Mm-hmm. But like, Owen just thinks, oh, like to be fair though, I do really believe that the Owen Amelia sex was very much just sex. I don't think Owen.
I think it was, but it was funny how it was starting to become not about sex where they start talking like jabs at each other where he's like, you know, he makes a comment to her when he's leaving. He's like, maybe see you, maybe won't. I don't remember what he says, but she's kind of like, huh? He says something maybe about her tumor.
Oh yeah.
And then, or I don't know, not wanting a kid. That's what it was.
Oh, he brings that up
like as he's putting his pants on.
And she's
on.
Like, are we doing this? Like,
and
no.
And then he leaves. And then later in the day, she's like, okay, tumor. Like, that's not fair that you brought that up.
Yeah.
And then that's when she calls Teddy
tumor. I don't think he was as emotionally invested where like Teddy's like, you were just with Amelia. I think he was sexually with her. I think he was a little checked out from her.
I think so too.
But I do like, can you imagine the love or the past love of your life shows up in your country? You're like, oh my God, this is it. And you find out the night before thinking about someone else.
It would be so devastating.
And like his fucking romantic talks he gives her.
Well, and not just, I think I could get past the, okay, you were with someone else, but that person told you to come to me.
Right.
Like,
you didn't make
that decision. It was because this person was like, you should be with Teddy. And was like, oh, you're right. I should go.
He is so not in touch with his emotions.
Not at all.
He is like situational. Whoever he's with in that
moment. He is a meathead. A beefhead? What are they called?
Meathead.
He's a total meathead.
Also, okay, this did tie together a little bit, although it still feels icky to me, like their proposal later on in the seasons. Like, it was snowing in all this Germany shit. Mm-hmm. I did not know, like, I didn't remember that tie-in. Because remember when he proposes, there's, like, all the snow?
Yeah. And then
did
also
you remember
when
that? He makes it snow overseas.
Oh, yeah, I remembered all that.
See, and then, I didn't remember
and
that.
And remember the Teddy episode where she's kind of going, having like a COVID psychotic moment?
Yeah, and there's
moment.
Like snow. Right, but that's what I'm talking about. I just didn't realize the snow was actually in these episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't remember that at the time. And I was like, okay, well, that did follow through with that.
A lot of snow.
It was just so...
Okay. Her acting was incredible.
Dude, okay, the line when she said, you don't ever get to talk about Henry.
Yeah.
Because I think like he uses that up as like, you fell in love with a patient. And she just, the way her like guttural, like it was almost Christina like that you don't get to talk about Henry. Because mm-hmm. I do think she loved Henry and that was different. He throws that in her fucking face.
Yeah. Also, it's gotta be like what? Like 2-3 in the morning when he shows up and she just so quickly like, what's on a record? And they like, and I know like he came all, but I would be fucking exhausted. I'd be like, let's deal with this in the morning, sir. Let's have sex, go to bed. We don't need to like
talk about
stay
it.
Up all night. And
can I read the long quote from
yes,
her when she
do.
Kicks him out? She says, maybe because all you ever do is hurt me, Owen. You string me along for years with these half-baked declarations and then you marry other women. And then you fly halfway across the world to my doorstep and you convince me that this is real, that you're in this with me, that you love me, that you want me. And it has never, ever, ever been about me. And then when you have me, when you really have me and you have me believing that you mean it, I find out that 24 hours earlier, your ex-wife, who you just screwed, told you to. I am done being your fallback. I am done being your damn sloppy seconds. I am not your consolation prize. So good.
Yeah. I hate that he tries to like, I don't think at that point he tries to like push back. But at one point when they're like going back and forth, he's like, you're not available or something. Yeah. I don't know. He said something about the Henry thing. And it's like, Owen, you are so in the wrong in this moment. Just
yeah.
Accept
Shut
it.
Shut the fuck up.
Just accept it and
And it's true. Like, even when he was with Christina, he and Teddy had a thing and he went and married Christina.
Yeah.
Like, there is, even with Amelia, although I guess they were already married, like when she came back for Megan, you know, like it just.
Teddy says something too that I think is spot on. She says like something along the lines of he's incapable of being alone, which yes, I think so is true. Very true. Like he wants... he is out of a relationship, he has to find someone else to be with and occupy his time.
Yes, which I just realized too. Like when she was back with Megan, they kiss, right? Yeah, they kiss on that bench.
Oh, do they kiss or she? Yeah, she stops
and him. Then she's like, you're married, like whatever. And then he ends up trying to make it work with Amelia. It's like yet again, she's yeah. right. Like he just continues to choose other women.
Yes.
It just makes it that much of a bummer to me that she comes back and marries Owen.
I know.
Although she does cheat on him first. So I feel good about that.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about all of that. Oh,
he
God.
Deserves, he honestly fucking... I remember feeling sort of bad for him. I think he deserves that.
Well, what I feel bad for is the fact that he had to hear it on the phone. Okay, like, we don't need, like, the audible, visual, whatever. Like, that's not...
Mm-mm.
No one deserves that.
Yeah. So anyways, I was excited to watch this episode again because I knew it happened. He's just such an idiot. That's all I have to say.
You know what we have coming up soon?
What?
The EMDR with him.
Oh, is this when he finally goes to therapy?
Yeah, maybe this season or next season.
Yeah, maybe that will fix him.
Maybe.
Because he clearly has some issues.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nick Marsh.
Okay, I actually have thoughts.
Okay, go for it.
First of all, I was excited because when he was announced that he was coming back on Grey's, I like really did not remember this episode. So I felt like this was a good connector of the dots for me.
Yep.
And okay, I am choosing to believe that Nick Marsh is endgame for Meredith Grey.
Okay.
So I went into watching this with that perspective.
Okay.
Like, okay, Grey's, show me why you brought him back. Like, what is the point? And I'm skipping ahead. I was fucking blown away that little scene at the end when she turns and
she's
looks at the winner.
Meredith.
And it's yes, and it's the scene when Meredith looked and saw Derek at the bar and like the pilot.
Yeah.
And so I felt a little bit like, okay, Grace, you put an Easter egg there. Like you've never done that with another guy for her.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean this writing is good enough, but it does feel to me a little bit like, if at the very end of Grey's, they do some sort of flashback, whatever, they can point to the fact that
they did that.
When she talked about Nick Marsh and that no one has made her feel like that way since Derek and she turns, they played that up, that clip.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit like, okay.
Yeah, no, I think you make a really great argument there. I don't think they ever intended on having this character back on, but it works really well.
Why? That
they do.
I wonder why they did that then, just to show us that she's...
The point of like, she's ready to move on. Cause we get DeLuca soon. Remember?
Right.
So I think of like, it was the first time she said she felt like feelings like she had with Derek. Like she could feel that again. So I think we're just supposed
to. Does that mean she didn't feel that with Riggs?
Maybe.
Just a different feeling.
Yeah. I think Riggs was different in the way that like they had both lost someone and you know, and this is like, oh, I have these butterfly feelings and this is fun and cool. So I don't know. I didn't have bad feelings or good feelings. Like I just didn't really care.
Do you
about
remember
this.
When you, if you'd been watching this and you didn't know he came back, like when we first watched it, do you remember feeling like, ooh, I hope this guy sticks around? And then
I don't remember how I felt about it. I want to say I liked him, but I really don't remember.
He's quick, which I feel like Meredith needs, you know, like.
The one thing, can I just say that bothered me? That, the one thing that bothered me was like, they're sitting, they're chatting. He's like, I gotta keep this kid. And then all of a sudden we see it's a thrombo. He's playing the thrombosis.
And then he's about to die.
And then he's like, he was totally fine 5 seconds
But the
later.
Monologue says in any second, only takes so many seconds, you can go from being Vine to dying.
Okay, fine. But it really drove me crazy. I'm all of a sudden he's just like.
Save my kidney. Also, the deed is in the whatever drawer. Like you should have that shit written somewhere.
Yeah.
Especially
because you have like health concerns.
Yeah.
Like
I I did like when she's at the bar with Alex too. I think he says, is it really the worst thing in the world knowing that it's there if you want it?
Yeah.
Which I feel like is opening up this next season for like DeLuca, Meredith, you know, then Cormac, like it's there if you want it, Meredith, like you're good, you know? Yeah.
I thought her idea of like what she would do if she wasn't a doctor was interesting.
I don't
like
remember hers.
The ladies who were like 80 and 90 years old who had like chickens and like just go and like sit on a hammock with
her
kids.
She brings that up. Which, do you think she was traveling with Sadie when she talks about her travels?
Yeah, I think so. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which, okay, if you've ever, like, you've been to Europe, I remember thinking when I was in Italy, like, wait, some people just like work at a little shop and then they're like, what the fuck? Could I have that as my life?
I don't think so. I think we're stuck in this part of the simulation over here.
But do you think if I'd move somewhere, opened a little flower shop?
I think it'd be really hard to open some. It'd be like the fucking movie Chocolat with Johnny Depp.
Okay, it's fine. I get her. It's like if I can't be in the hustle bustle world of surgery, I would like to do nothing and be.
Well, and she says those things about like, no, we'd all live super old. No one would die. Like no one would get sick.
Yeah.
We'll be healthy. Because she's had a lot of death in her life.
So much. Anyways, I also think it tells a little bit about Meredith, though, that she's like, I've always wanted to be a surgeon. Like, there's no other career for her. We don't ever have to risk her, like, not doing this job.
Yeah.
Although, who knows, season 8 or season 19.
Season 8. Oh, God, please don't take us back.
I guess that's all I have.
That's all I have, too. Okay. Don't forget that we're going to talk about those other patients in post-op if you're interested in that. But we will go into notes and trivia.
Yeah. This episode's title originated from the song Old Scars, Future Hearts, originally sung by All Time Low.
It scored 7.18 million viewers.
Features flashbacks to the childhood of Maggie, Joe, and Alex.
This is the first episode set in the hospital since the introduction of the hospital's new interns, not to feature any of them.
Except for beloved dead TV show character, all the situations Tom mentioned to April have already happened to a character.
Alcoholism, Richard Weber.
Oh, drug addiction, Amelia Shepherd.
Cancer, Izzy.
Physical trauma, Arizona.
Dead relatives, several characters.
Meredith, Christina, Alex, and more. Dead pet.
Yeah.
Meredith Grey, Derek Shepherd, and Addison. Okay, it was the same pet.
Mental illness, Miranda Bailey, Andrew DeLuca.
Acute clinical depression.
We don't know about Andrew yet, though, I don't think.
That's true.
This and was crisis written. Of faith was April.
Oh, that's funny, that he listed all those things, and then it's like they've touched on it. I didn't gather that.
Oh, while we were reading that? It wasn't until the end? Okay.
The scene where Joe proposes to Alex was filmed on Camilla Luddington's birthday, December 15th. Coincidentally, Camilla was proposed to only 2 weeks later while the ring was already hidden in her house at the time of filming the proposal scene.
Oh. Goof, as Alex is following his mother into the kitchen, a yellow mark for Kelly Goss can be seen on the floor.
Oh, I want to go watch it. This episode's title originated of the song Caught Somewhere in Time, originally sung by Iron Maiden.
It scored 7.61 million viewers.
Originally, Kevin McKidd was supposed to direct this episode, but he was given the next episode because the script for this one wasn't ready at the time he was supposed to start preparing.
Okay, the next episode's title originated from the song One Day Like This, originally sung by Elbow.
Wait, so what the fuck? Kevin directed the Owen Teddy episode. He probably put that snow there.
Step in, step out.
The episode scored 7.15 million viewers.
Although it was not mentioned on screen, Krista Vernoff and Shonda Rhimes dedicated this episode to Suzanne Patmore Gibbs, who died a few hours before the airing of the episode. She was an executive at ABC at the time of the show's pilot and the first executive there who showed belief in Shonda.
Mm. On Twitter, Krista revealed that this was her favorite episode of the season.
Interesting. Originally, Kevin McKidd was supposed to direct the previous episode rather than this one. We know all of this.
So he directed this one. The scene where April and Eli have their big talk was filmed almost entirely in one take. Oh, I love that. Using three cameras at the same time to film all different points of view, which is rare in television. Only a couple of special shots were shot separately.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine the emotional arc of doing that all in one take?
Yeah. The scene is reminiscent of the death of Heather Parker when Pete Wilder pretends to be Dell before she dies.
That's a private practice.
Yeah, that is.
The last shot in the episode is when Meredith turns around in the bar. That shot is from a previous episode when she turned around looking for Derek.
This episode does not contain any visual surgical scenes in the operating room.
The clothes Meredith is wearing are very similar to the ones she wore in What's Inside.
Despite only being referred to as Meredith's girlfriend, it can be assumed that she's talking about Sadie Harris when talked about her trip to Sardinia.
I gave the Catherine Fox Award to Eli the Rabbi.
I think that's great.
It was so touching.
Yeah, I will stand with you on that one.
I'm an Eli stan. I also gave it a 9 out of 10.
Okay. That's so hard for me. I feel like the April storyline, I would give a 10 out of 10.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give it an 8.5. Perfect. I didn't really care for the Nick Marsh stuff.
I just was using it as research. Like, I felt like, ooh.
Yes, that's a great way to do it.
So yeah. That enticed me. Also, honestly, the Owen Teddy thing was interesting to me. And even though I didn't feel connected to Joe, the proposal was also like, ooh.
Yeah.
So 9 out of 10, 8 out of 5. That's a great rating.
Yeah.
All right. Stick around for post-op. Otherwise, time of death is 2102.
Beep.